Accession number 17395, Rule 5.
Mr. Norton, Rule 5.
Yes, I, as I said, I'd been into Kemple before, but when they first moved us in as reinforcements, but this time we were in a bigger plane, a big transport plane from Tokyo main airfield, and I remember going in, and this big bin in the middle was there for us to be sick if we wanted to, and everybody was all right on the journey. But as we approached Kemple, it was so busy and so thing, medical supplies and evacuations were more important than us landing. So consequently, we had to roam around the airfield. We had to make two detours around the airfield. Well, of course, then the plane started to tilt and roll a little bit. Well, of course, then there was one big mad rush for the bin. And all you could see was about four back sides hanging out the bin, being sick. That was the only time anybody was sort of really airsick, because we couldn't get into Kemple Airfield because of the medical supplies and things took priority. There was no runway available. So anyway, we did finally land, and because we went back and they took us back into the line, and that was the end of our luxury holiday. We had our break.
Do you think the break did you good?
Pardon? Yes, although it was heartbreaking and rendering, you could never really, really, unless you were sort of, you'd had enough beer in you to let it get out of your mind for a few hours, you know, forget about it. But you always had it behind your mind that you had to go back. You had to go back, you know, and but while it lasted, it was okay. You had to enjoy it and do what you could, you know. But I was never, while I was in Tokyo, you know, apart from being there in the beer hall and what have you, I never felt, although I sent a tea set home to my mother from Tokyo by sea. She got it 2 months later, a China, I still got it in here, part of it. And I never felt safe in Japan, walking in the streets. I think possibly I always look back on that as the films that I'd seen, the indoctrination against the Japanese during the Second World War, the atrocities and things they created. I had that. I'd gone through that era with the films, you know, the concentration camps and the Back to Bataan and John Wayne films and all that. I'd seen all them, and I took a dislike or the a bit, and I felt that when I was in Japan, I couldn't really trust myself walking along in a British uniform. I know, I've been silly, I might have just been my thing, but that's how I felt. You know, because, I mean, a place like Tokyo, you're so jam-packed full of people, you're shoulder to shoulder scrambling, but it's a wonderful place to go to and shop and what have you. Mind you, it must be more marvellous today. I mean, I've seen photographs of Seoul. I stayed in Seoul. I was in Seoul for, I don't know how long. I went to a cinema show there in Seoul. But to look at it now, it was just a shanty sort of place when I left, when I got into Seoul. But now it's all built up, modern city and what have you. But I remember going to a show in Seoul, because we docked at Seoul coming from Kiri, South Japan. When I've got there, we went through there to Seoul, Kiri to Seoul. Yeah, I landed at Seoul, not Busan. I came back from Busan, landed at Seoul Harbour. And we had a few days in there in a transit camp beforehand. And there was a cinema and these shows, you know, and Aussies were in there. And I always remember going to one of the shows in Seoul. And there was like these strips. And these Aussies were in there, they were always big Aussies. And they were sitting in the front row. And I went and sat beside them, zipping. And there was all these wires going across this show. And that was where these ladies used to walk. And these Aussies had an elastic band always around their heads. And I remember we sitting there, and smoke was everywhere. And these Aussies had these elastic bands, and they were pinging pieces of cardboard. I'll never forget them. I'll never forget them. And that was while waiting to go into that was in Seoul, where we landed. But no, when I look back, I had some good laughs and good times. And but the biggest career is about Dawn Till Dusk. You know, mind you, I had another session, I say Dawn Till Dusk, I had another session where we were in a, which I thought was a comparatively quiet area. That's another one. A comparatively quiet area, and we'd been playing cards and for cigarettes. We played for cigarettes because we had all these cigarettes. We played for, we were carrying around, while we were in a defensive position, we had something like 600,000 or 700,000 cigarettes or more. And we used to transfer them, we had no money to play with. And you never smoked a cigarette. You just used them as a figurehead, as a thing to play for. And on this position, and it seemed a strange position, really. What I remember of it was a fairly flat area. Actually, Jeeps and 1500 weights could come up to this area. And this particular afternoon, we were hanging about, playing cards and things. And all of a sudden, we were mortared, two or three inch mortars. And I remember so Corporal Ritterband, his name was. He was a Spanish or something, Greek or something. He was a nice chap, he was a really nice chap, he was. Corporal Ritterband. And all of a sudden they started to shell us, or mortar. They weren't shells, mortars. And of course we ran to these, to the trenches. And I remember Corporal Ritterband, he went in his dunk, went in, and a shell followed him in. As he went in, a mortar went in behind him. And he ripped him from his chin to his stomach. He brought him out and loaded him onto the Jeep and a trailer. They had a Jeep and a trailer, and they lifted him. And they shelled us, or they mortared us. We got in the trenches, and they mortared us. It was in the afternoon. They mortared us for, seemed aged, but a couple of hours. I remember them calling out for Band-Aids, Band-Aids. I remember getting out of my trench and getting one of my Band-Aids. You would get two. And I remember I don't know whether I gave the two up or one up, and I gave the Band-Aid to one of these trenches because one of them got hit or wounded, and I got back. And that seemed ages. And that was another time where when you're mortared like that, you don't know. I mean, when you get that raining down on you for an hour or something like that, you don't know where the next one, that's the uncertainty of it. There's so much area. If they're pinpointed you in, the next one could be yours, you know. And that's what, while they were dropping and you never hit, you were okay, you said, well, you know. And then I was supposed to have one hit, but I remember him diving in, and they said he got in and got up to the end of his thing, and one followed him in. And I remember them taking him out. And then I think that was one mortar. The other one where my cap, and then when I tell you about the captain, when I came back from Korea, I wasn't home very long, and I had malaria, and I lost a lot of weight. I didn't know I had malaria. It was cotton, and my brothers took me out, and hadn't been feeling too well for several weeks. And I started going a bit gaunt in the face. And I remember buying a new suit. And my brothers took me out with my wife, who's my wife now, and my brother's wife. And we went to one of the busy spots in Yarmouth, the Minor Hall Aquarium. And I remember being violently sick over my new suit. And I realised there was something ill. I carried on working. And I left off one night from work, and I said, I'm going straight to the doctor's. I went to the doctor, and he said, oh, he said, you've got a temperature, he said, of 105. He said, I'm not going to send you home. He said, you've got to go straight in the hospital. I said, please let me go home and clean up. I'd been at work all day. I said, would you let me home? He said, I'll let you home, he said, providing you get yourself indoors, get cleaned up what you want to do. He said, and I'll send for the ambulance at 8 o'clock for you. It was on Granville Road. My two older brothers, Ernie and Fred, they were there with my mother. And I remember we had an old sewing machine, the old singer sewing, a gramophone, in my room, in our living room. I remember sitting, there was a chair either side of that. And I got home, my two brothers were there, and my mother, and I came home, And I told them I'd been to the hospital, I'd been to the doctors, and they're going to send for an ambulance. 8 o'clock. So my brother said, you can't wait until 8 o'clock, he said. You're going in there before then, he said. So I said, no, I said 8 o'clock. Of course, then I remember, sort of, not collapsing, but feeling so ill, I laid on the gramophone, and I heard my brother get up, and he went, because we never had no phones in them days, there's no telephones indoors, nobody had telephones, only doctors, solicitors, and business people. My brother had to rush down to the nearest phone, and he phoned the ambulance, and they came straight away. My brother came with me, and they took me to the tropical disease ward in Goulston Hospital. I took a blood test, and found out, yes, I had malaria. Then I had two special doctors come down from Norwich or London somewhere, because that was a rarity, malaria, to come in this area. And two specialists came down from, I don't know where they come from, London or somewhere, and examined me. And I went down from 10 stone 4 to 7 stone. And I used to have these attacks, you know. Every night, 4:30, I'd start to shake and sweat. You know, the bed, I'd move the bed, nothing to move the bed, 2 foot from the wall, the steel bed. And they'd cover me over with blankets and bottle. No, I don't know their pot of bottle. And they could literally take the sheets off and wring them out. Water in the sheets, what I'd sweat in. And they treated me with quinine. 8 days, I think, I had that treatment. And then I was walking home one day, and I met a fella, what now he was. I told him, he said, why don't you put in for a pension? So I did. And I had to go to Norwich, Martin New Hall. And they said, yes, this is after I'd done my hospital and all the time off from work. Give me a pension. And they awarded me 6 months back pay of 10 and 6 pence, which was 52.5p a week. And they carried the pension on for another 12 months. Then they said, your pension is going to stop as you occurred of your malaria. So I had to go to Martin New Hall again, and I was examined by a doctor. He felt the pit of my stomach. They're supposed to have a pit or something in the stomach. He said, yes, you're cleared, and I lost my pension. And I carried on okay. I didn't have much more illnesses. And then I got my papers to go for 14-day training at Luggenshall in Salisbury.
Army training.
After I'd done my career. And I went to the doctors and I said, I don't really feel fit to go. I said, just had malaria. I said, I don't feel like going. I said, sorry. I said, to me, it's a waste of time. I said, I've just been through 14 months of, or 12 months of almost hell. I said, well, he said, I think that's rather an understatement for a man of your age, he says. I had to go. I didn't do nothing. I'd never swung the lead. I'd never swung the lead in the army. I didn't. I've never done it deliberately. I always obeyed orders as much as I could. And I was determined not to do anything. And we went on one or two trainings. There again, the weather was bad. Not as bad as I'd experienced it. We were out there doing silly things, as far as I was concerned, of what I'd gone through and what I'd done. And I jumped off the lorry one. We get to march across, or go across this area. Exactly the same sort of thing that I'd done in Korea, but in practice. I'd done it in real. And we had to do it again, through this field, from dawn, just after 7 in the morning, piddling down the rain, going through this. I thought to myself, Christ, I've done this. I'm, you know, do I have to do it? And I thought to myself, I got back on the lorry, up at 3 or 4 o'clock, and I jumped off. I forgot myself. I said I'd hurt my foot. I put my foot down a rabbit hole. Oh, and I forgot myself. I jumped off the lorry, didn't I? Nobody noticed it. I went into the ML, and I said to him, I'd hurt my foot. He said, oh, he said, excuse duties. He'd give me excuse duties. And I went through that training period, more or less like that. I did some training. Then the next year, they sent for me again.
Why were you having to do this if you'd finished your national service?
It was on reserve. On, I had them 3 years reserves. Three, 2 weeks. They sent, next year, they sent for me again. And I had to go to Thetford Battle Area. The same thing again. And I'd done the same thing again. I went sick. And when I went sick, the doctor there was a Dr. Anderson. And he says to me, oh, Private Norton. I said, yes. I said, Dr. Anderson. He said, yes. I said, were you my CO, my medical officer? I can't see you in Korea once. Oh, he said, did I treat your Major Tate with his head blown off? I said, that's right. Well, he said, Private Norton, he said, I think, he said, where do you live? Live in Yarmouth, don't you? I said, yes. He said, well, I think you're entitled to 3 days by the sea. And he gave me Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday off back. He said, I think you decide 3 days at the sea. I was like, well, bless her. That was handy. And I did whatever I could to get out of the silly, stupid waste of time that I was doing, you know. And then they sent for me again. And that was the time my boy was born. And my boy was due, was born the week I was supposed to go away. And I got out of that. As soon as he was born, they sent for me to go to Norwich, Britannia Barracks, for 14 days. I'd done the same there again. I'd done the same thing as that I'd done in Colchester. Stripped down the brain gun, reassembled it, blindfolded, in the open field at the time of the year, right by the Norwich prison. And I remember one instance, I was looking across to the prisoners gardening, and this officer said to me, second lieutenant, he said to me, Norton, he says, would you sooner be over there or in here? I said, don't mind. I said, I'd just as well be over there as to be here. I said, what you're telling me, I'm going to pick it. I said, what you're telling me here, what I'm wasting my time on, what would be out in that garden over there? I said, don't bother me, sir. So he said, Benny, right, he said, you're here, he says, get it cut. He said, for, you know, for being a bit obstinate. He said, I want it cut for my parade in the morning. So I had to come home. He knew I was getting home at night. I was getting home, I was hitchhiking home at night. I lived on High Road in Galston. He said, get your hair cut, in spite of what, because I said that to him, you see. And I did get my hair cut. And I went back the following morning, he said, that's better, he said, that's better, he said. And that fortnight, I'd done in Norwich, I spent one half day, I'd lost my eating utensils. And I spent one morning trying to get a set of new utensils. I wasn't interested. I wasn't. I didn't give a hoot.
But I don't understand why you were doing this periodical training.
It was compulsory government. It was a government.
If you were a conscript.
Yes, everybody done it. And then they cancelled it after. Just as I finished my third year, they cancelled it.
So that was something all conscripts had all, to do?
All conscripts done it. All conscripts done it. And you couldn't get out of it. They even got me after my... the maternity leave, they stopped it, and they where I should have gone was somewhere in Salisbury again, but I did benefit out of it because I got home every night. I should get home by 6, and I was back by Reveille in the morning. All through, some of the time I went by train, but most of the time I got lifts there and back.
Can I clarify about the regiment you were in? Because I'm not clear about it. You started off in the
first battalion of the Royal Norfolk. They were the training regiment in Britannia Mayani Barracks at Colchester. After my two lots of training, my basic training, jungle training, I was then transferred to the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment. There I was moved to Salisbury. No, I went to Bury St Edmunds first, sorry. Bury St Edmunds. Right by the Suffolk, in a camp, a wooden camp there. That's where I was at, that's right. Bury St Edmunds. I forgot that bit. And while I was at Bury St Edmunds, I done training again, all the while. Foot training, weapon training, and I also guarded the Marham airfield for the B-47 bombers. There was some sabotage or something, and we had to go there and guard the perimeter for a week while I was in the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment at Bury St Edmunds. I had to guard Marham airfield with live ammunition, the only time I leave live ammunition. There was a serious breach thing in the, I think they were B-47 atom bombers at the time, and they had some pilfering or something going on, and they shipped us in there, in the under tents, under the wind. I remember laying there, and under these here, with the big dune bugs coming down, you know, and we had to go out every 2 hours and patrol the perimeter, and when we met the next man, we had to come back, but we always had 5 live ammunition, and that was really the time I used live ammunition, apart from rifle ranges. And that was when I was in the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment. Then I was moved from the Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire Regiment, we moved to the Demonstration Battalion in Warminster, Wiltshire.
Then that was still the Beds and Hearts.
In the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire. That's where I done my nursing stint. From there, they drafted me to Korea as a Middlesex man. I had the badge, blood and sand. Then they, as soon as I got in Korea, I was in a pop tent, pouring with rain, bitterly cold, and somebody opened the door, opened the flap and said, "You're no longer in the Middlesex Regiment, you're in the King's Shropshire Light Infantry." And then I was in the King's Shropshire Light Infantry. Then it was all go, 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 of what I've told you in my...
At what stage in Korea did you change over from the Middlesex to the Shropshires?
First day in Korea, into actual, within striking distance, I suppose, of going into the... Moving forward.
Front line?
Moving towards the front line and into the positions. It was almost the first day from the... when they dropped me at the airfield, back into the transit camp, and then from the transit camp into these tents. And then the man comes up and says, "You're in the King's Shropshire Light Infantry." And that's the last, and that's what I come out as. I had to go to Shropshire to be demobbed, where they took all my army stuff away to me, from me. And then I was reissued with it at the Norfolk Drill Hall.
Now, did you have any malaria bouts in Korea itself?
No. No, they said it was contracted in Hong Kong. As you see on that photo, in Hong Kong, we had boots, gaiters, socks, nothing on her legs, and in shorts, which is looked at there was who was standing in a hole. And they reckon Hong Kong was the most likely place that I contracted, because Korea wasn't a malaria-infested area.
Have you had any other after effects?
I've had a terrible, terrible time. I've had a severe heart attack at the age of 43. I've been on medication between 15, which I now take 10, I was on 15 tablets. I had angina at first. Then I had a serious heart attack on Easter morning when I was 43 years old. They took me in hospital, extensive care for 7 days, then another 6 days. Then I was off work for 7 months. No pay, all in my national insurance. Then I recuperated, got back to work. Doctors told me not to work no more, but I carried on. Not being big-headed about it, but number one, I couldn't afford to go, and I had more ambition in life, and I looked a good future ahead of me, and I was an ambitious worker, and I loved my work, and I loved my life, and I carried on, and I took things easy when I could. I worked hard when I had to. I knew when not to do and not what to do, and then I developed, which I didn't know at the time, spondylosis of the neck and spine. And I used to sit in here when I first moved in here, and I had violent pains in my neck, and I got so worried about it. I'm not a wealthy man. My wife was still out to work at 64. She had to stay on because of losing my pension. I had to pay for a specialist to make sure that this, what I had, weren't serious. Of course, he wanted to start the ball rolling with a visit out of visit, and I said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not in a wage bracket to employ you or see you as a patient. I will have to wait my turn under the National Health, which I did. I got appointments for the Galton Hospital. They gave me electric treatment, pad treatment, and I suffered with that and my back, and it's progressively got worse over the years. And then I got chronic osteoarthritis of the knees, and now I've got it in the spine of my back and my hip. My doctor tells me now I can have a new hip when I'm 70, if I live that long. Why I've got to wait till 70, I don't know. But I had before, I've worked for myself for several years, on and off. The doctor told me when I did get there, I got a little job, easier job, under doctor's orders. Then I got stood off because I was incapable, really, of doing what they wanted. I did take the pick of the court and won the day from that job. But then the doctor said to me, no more work. You can't, no more work. I said, well, can I just do for myself? So I went and started to do a little bit for myself.
And how much of your ill health is due to your army service, do you think?
I would think my heart attack and my spondylosis of the spine and back. And they say you can get there, and I'm not so sure, but they say you can get help through a pension for him, so I'll have a go, you know. I mean, I've had nothing from the government for that, and I done my bit.
And you said your hearing, was that affected by
I mean, I was on my Korean adventures. I remember once being drawn into a tank support thing. We were moved from one position there again. I don't know how we got there, how many miles we walked, how far. But we had a guard. We had to guard the, I don't know where, the dragoon guards or the some Scottish tank regiment, and we had to protect them for several days, lay underneath them, lay the side of them, and they used to draw from us each day, each evening, onto a crest of a hill. With just the turrets showing above the hill, ready for firing and to forward. And then we had to be there as tank support, as infantry support. They fired while I was there. They could have found it. I had gunfire in Salisbury Plains on the tanks. So whether or not, I'm not a doctor. But there is proof now in one of the letters saying that it can be an effective thing from gunfire, air and aid. But as I say, I had the spondylosis. I had, when I was working for myself, I left my other job when they closed down after 30 years. I worked for one firm from 1949, 2 years in the army, and I worked with them until 1982. And I had no pension. I bought a pension. And because I became incapable of working at 62, I no longer contributed to National Health. So what they done, they sent my money back, what I'd been saving, £6,000, with no pension. So I finished up with no pension, because I was incapable of working. That's what I got